Yeah. Okay. No. Len, you can.
Okay. Thanks, Lucky. So that seems to be working all right out there, Chris. Thank you. Well, it's always a pleasure to come back to Dharmaloka. I really feel amongst friends here. And as Lucky has mentioned, on our committee for the Pure Land Project, we have Sue Lee. Sue's the deputy chair, and Sue is a member of BSWA. So we really are looking to form a committee that's got representation from different Buddhist groups. So tonight, we're going to start with a meditation, and I'm going to talk about healing a relationship by completing unfinished business. So it'll be in the nature of meditation come talk. And then after that, Sue will talk about the Pure Land Project, what's happening there, where we're at. And that will conclude the evening. So why would I choose a topic like healing a relationship by completing unfinished business? Well, it's something that we need to do, if we can, before we die. And I think it's true that most of us accumulate one or more unhappy or unsatisfactory relationships during our life. And then as death approaches, they prey on our mind and can make us very unsettled. But we can't bring ourselves to meet the persons concerned and try and heal the hurts. Or maybe they live far away and there's no chance of a face-to-face meeting. So this is a fairly deep subject and may raise some unhappy emotions in you. So I think we'll just start by very simple meditation. As you know, the body and the mind are intimately connected, and often we can relax the mind by first relaxing the body and vice versa. So let's sit comfortably. If you're sitting in a chair, it's good to try and sit upright, not leaning too much on the back of the chair if you can. The main thing is to be comfortable. So we're doing this to settle our minds and to focus. So we're going to bring our attention to the crown of our head. And then let your attention run down the back of your head to your neck. The neck can be quite tense, and it's intimately connected with the shoulders. Now you might think you're relaxed, but just make an extra special effort to let all the tension drain out of your neck and shoulders. Deliberately relax them. Now let your attention pass down your spine to your buttocks and on the way, if you find any places of that are tense, withdrawn, just relax them. And then let your attention go down your left leg. Relaxing all the muscles, the joints, right down to the foot. Just relaxing your feet, your toes. And we do the same with the right leg. Now bring your attention back to the crown of your head. And let it pass down the front of your face. The forehead is a place we harbour tension. Our headaches often start there. So just feel your forehead release, relax. And now your eyes. Just make sure they're not screwed up in any way. You might have to open slightly and close again, just to let the tension out. Now check your cheeks and your mouth. No clenching. Now down the front of your neck. And let your attention run down your arms, shoulders, letting go of any tension. And especially in the hands, the fingers. We often fidget with our fingers. Now bring your attention to the tip of your nose. And as you breathe in, feel the gentle flow of air. As you breathe out, maybe it's a little bit warmer. It's a very subtle sensation, just concentrate on it. Now you can gently count to five and try and focus on the subtle breath moving in and out through your nostrils without being distracted to anything else. So if you lose that concentration in any way, if it's not 100%, then just go back and start counting at one again. If you reach five without any distraction, you can try for 10. It's okay if you only make a few breaths with attention. Better that you have one close to perfect breath with complete attention. So now gently come out of the meditation. And we can dedicate any merit that we've generated with this simple practice by thinking that may any merit I've generated go to all those people whose lives are so busy, so frantic, so distracted, so unhappy, that they never get the chance to relax their body or their mind. May my merit flow out to them and bring them that peace. Okay, thank you. So we're going to talk about a method for completing unfinished business. And it's taken from a book by Christine Longacre. The book's called Facing Death and Finding Hope. And the method does not require that you meet with the other person or talk with them. You don't have to confront them again. You can heal the relationship from your side without meeting them. I've tried it on three relationships where things were not satisfactory, and for me it worked for two of them. The third one was much more difficult and I needed a few goes, and if I'm completely honest, I might be 99% there, but there's still some little niggle. I don't think I've dealt with it completely. So in other words, I can recommend it to you. I know it certainly worked for me in 2 out of 3 at least. So why would we have unfinished business with people? Well, we might be afraid of being hurt again or of being rejected. Or the other person might have said, I'll never forgive you. Or on the other hand, we might feel that what we've done is unforgivable. We may be hanging on to this because we think we can hurt the other person with our anger by hanging on to this, letting it bubble away and prey on our mind. We might be afraid to have our part of the problem revealed. We might feel that we've contributed, but we're not going to say it, not even to ourselves. Well, maybe the other person has gone from our life, maybe they've already died, and some people think this problem will go away when the other person dies, but it actually doesn't. So these are natural fears. We all have had something like this or have them to some degree. And they're obstacles to us talking to the other person to try and solve this emotional problem. But the thing is that it's actually our responsibility to resolve the problem. And the point is that with this method, as I said, we can finish the issue, the problem, whether or not the other person is present and whether or not they're willing to communicate with you and whether or not they're willing to forgive you. So what we're trying to do is to release ourselves from our own heavy baggage. It might be anger, attachment, guilt. And we want to free ourselves from our painful memories. So because that's all from our side, we don't actually have to meet the other person to complete this unfinished business and let go of the whole issue. So the healing, what you're trying to heal really is your own heart, and that's why it's your task. And as I said, that applies whether the other person is still living or whether they've died. And to give you a bit of an example of how this might work, I'd just like to talk about a grandfather called Joe who had a fight with his brother. And there was a hospice worker assigned to visit Joe. And what he found was that Joe had a very warm and loving family, children, grandchildren. They seemed to have very open communications with each other. And so the hospice volunteer, whose name was Mark, started to wonder, I think I'd better get assigned to some other family. I'm not needed here. But he thought just before he asked to be reassigned, he would have one last question to Joe. And he said, is there anything you can think of, anything at all, that I can help you with before you die? And Joe said, oh, I'm so glad you asked. I've been troubled by something that I really want to clear up before I die, but I don't know who to ask, and I definitely need help to do it. And Joe said to the hospice worker, 40 years ago, my brother and I had a terrible fight. And we haven't met or spoken to each other to this day. It happens. It happens in families, I know. And Joe said, I realise now that I was just too stubborn to give in. And I'm sorry that all these years have passed without any contact with my brother. I wish I could see him before I die. And I want to let him know that I'm sorry and ask him if he would forgive me. And so Joe said to the hospice volunteer, can you help me find my brother? And Mark was very grateful because it was something he could do. He thought it was something that maybe would help Joe die more peacefully. So he did some research and he eventually located Joe's brother and rang him up. And he said, I'm the hospice volunteer assigned to Joe. Joe asked me to contact you. He's close to dying and he really wants to see you and extend his apologies to you before he dies. And the brother's answer was quite stark. He said, I don't want to see Joe or have anything to do with him. So after that call, Mark wondered what he should do. But he soon realised that the most important thing had already happened. And that was that Joe was really sorry for his part in the fight, and he'd communicated that to his brother. So Mark went to see Joe and said, I've contacted your brother. He can't see you, but he's got your message. So going through that process, on Joe's side, the matter, the unfinished business, had been healed. Perhaps his brother was not yet ready to let go of his own bad feelings. Yet later, when he neared the end of his life, maybe he would also realise that he wanted to get rid of this burden. And if that happened, he would know that his brother had already forgiven him. So that's how this process can work. Now, I want to go through this method in a bit more detail, because that was a story that illustrated some of the principles, but the method is a little bit more involved than that, or it might sound that way. So the first thing we have to do is to sit quietly and find the willingness in your own heart to actually want to settle the problem. You actually got to decide, I really want to settle this. It's troubling me. I'm going to settle it, and then I'm going to let go of it because I don't want it hanging over me anymore. And now, to help this process along, I'm going to have to think about the fact that the person I've had this argument with, or fight, disagreement, they're not all bad. They will have some good points. And and when I visualise them, which is the next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to imagine that they're actually listening to me. They're taking in what I have to say, not ignoring it. So the next step is to visualise the person that you had the disagreement with. You have the unfinished business. And you imagine the person sitting right in front of you, exactly the way you remember them. But now with an important difference, as I said, you consider that she is, I'm going to call her a she, you consider that she's more open and receptive than ever before, and that she can really hear everything you say. She's really listening to you. Now you've got to reflect on what is the main difficulty for you with trying not to rekindle any emotions. So you've got to try and be objective and think, now in that situation, what actually upset me? What was actually going on? You've got to try and put that in a nutshell. So when you've done that, you tell the other person in your mind that what you found, about what for you the main problem was, why in that fight you were so upset, what caused it from your point of view. And you imagine that the other person really hears you, listens to you, takes it in. And then you stop and you think again, and you think back before that incident, and you think of any other incidents before that, and you try and express the fact that they're still also hanging over you. And imagine that you're telling the other person who's sitting in front of you, what you feel. So that's all done in your own mind. Now, the next step is to take a pen and paper and actually write it down. And I thought, initially when I tried it, I thought, oh, that's too much trouble. Why should I write it down? I've thought about this now and I can see what the problem was. And I'll do what's recommended. But actually, I found writing it down was necessary if the unfinished business was at all serious. It really helps clarify things. So you write down the problem that you've just identified as objectively as you can. And you remember that as you're writing it, you're speaking to the other person's open heart, that they're really receptive and that this time they're really listening and they can really hear you. Because they're not all bad. Nobody's 100% bad. They will be able to do that. Now, the next point might sound a bit artificial, but it works. You can try it. The next point is to, in your mind, allow the other person to express what they think. In other words, you're putting into their mouth the words that you think and the thoughts that you think they would say in response to you. And since you've been speaking to their best side and your feelings have been heard, your response that you're thinking about or writing down probably won't be what you expect. And that was certainly the case for me. When I actually wrote the words down of what I thought the other person would say in response to me apologising, it didn't come out the way I expected, because I knew that I was meant to be writing it down from the point of view of their best side. So you can write down the dialogue that you imagine might be taking place between you and the other person and express all the layers of the difficulties until you feel that there's nothing more hidden in any corner of your heart. You've got rid of it all, you've written it all down, you've expressed it to them, you've told them what the issues were in as kind a way as you can. And if the other person had previously hurt you, you see now whether you can extend them forgiveness. And if you realise that you've hurt the other person, you ask for their forgiveness. And you might reflect that since you're talking to the best side of the other person, they would understand your regret. They wouldn't hesitate to extend their forgiveness to you. So you can then accept the healing love of this forgiveness that's being extended to you. And you can let go of any feelings of guilt or self-condemnation. And you can even look into your heart and see whether there's anything at all now positive about the other person that you can think of. You usually find something. And probably earlier in the relationship, there were very good times. So you'll find something good that you can say back to them, some positive thing. So now, to finish it, you can communicate your love for them in writing and wish them well. And you can even imagine at that point, the other person who's been sitting in front of you gets up and walks away. And now, as we do in the Buddhist tradition, two things are important, one at the beginning, one at the end, the motivation in the beginning, the dedication at the end. So you can dedicate your efforts and their merit with the strong wish that the other person and yourself may be healed of all emotional pain or past traumas, and that your relationship now or in the future may be one of mutual benefit. And at all the others you have contact with that are around you and the other person can share in the healing power that's going to come from this resolution. Now, if that process doesn't quite get you there, what you can do then is later you try reading what you've written down in front of a picture of the other person. And that may help you complete the process. Now, some people, when they get to this stage to conclude it, they also will write down on their piece of paper, "I would like to hear from you," if that's what you feel. And the author of the method, who's very experienced, Christine Longacre, says that many people have told me that if the person is still living, they do hear from them within days or weeks of you concluding this unfinished business, and that often the other person communicates a sense of resolution on their side as well. Pretty amazing. But we know the power of prayer, and she has experienced that. So that's the method. As I said, I have tried it myself on three people. The third person was difficult. I don't think I'm 100% there yet. So if you have any unresolved issues, much better to try and settle them now than as you are dying, when you have less power of concentration and you'll probably be a little bit afraid, and there might be other people around and it won't be so easy. So best to do it now. So that's what I wanted to say. I wanted to give you an example of some of the things that we'll be talking about with the volunteers who help at our centre as part of their training. And we hope to commence some of that training next year. But Sue's going to tell you more about where we're at with the Pure Land Project. And just before that, I think we've got time for a couple of questions, if anybody's got a question or a comment. Yeah.
I've asked for if you always forgive and your forgiveness is being used and not taken seriously, what can you do then? The other side always make trouble and always forgive. But later on, the forgiveness has no point because it's only a word, what to go through a little piece, but the person itself doesn't actually learn and make effort to change that something, why he was forgiven.
Yeah, very difficult, isn't it?
Because sometimes...
So you've extended...
What you made the mistake, what was the mistake in the first place.
Yeah.
But they have to explain somehow to the mistake. And sometimes the mistake itself is very hurtful and can create more trouble than actual not talking about it. And you forgive, yeah, every cell is down, but over a while it pops up again. So you see, forgiveness is just a word you use it to get through, and you know, so like illusionary band-aid. But actually it doesn't change nothing in the heart. But how you can get that forgiveness through the heart?
You're talking about your heart or the other person's?
Other person's heart.
The other person's.
So
My feeling is that you can't expect to change the other person. You can't expect to make them forgive you. What we're doing in this one is to make sure that in the depths of our heart that we really have forgiven the other person. That's about as much as we can do.
Well, I can tell you the story of my own life. I have a girlfriend and she's from a bit of mental problems and everything, and over 3 years, she's got better, but he always has done things that really hurt them physically and both things. I always forgive him, but at the same time, he accepted. He's very glad that I forgive him because he really needs me much, but he doesn't really understand why he was wrong. And he, even if it's wrong what he did, and in essence there's no point and no reason and there's no source for the logically to accuse someone of these things, he still does it, and he hasn't changed his mind. So endlessly forgiving sometimes gives how the person, how the strength to continue doing it, because they know they'll always be forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to actually point out and put him in the face where he has to lose something, or he will change something in himself to get that forgiveness. To understand what is forgiveness and why he needs to change himself. And sometimes in the Buddhist,
you've got a difficult situation there.
Well, I found solution for myself, but I know it's a lot of talking, and you have to find compassion. And what is compassion? Compassion is my understanding how other person thinks and feel that same way. So to understand him might find a way how to get him out of there. But some point people are very, get very offended if you touch the very inside and very, hidden parts of them. Even if it's wrong and it's the person's mistake, and if really touch it and explain it out, they can sometimes get offended by it.
Yep. So thanks for your comments, and good luck with your resolution. Maybe one more question before Sue talks. Or comment? Yeah. Go. Oh, you've got it. Yeah.
Forgiveness. So if you basically think someone needs forgiveness, that you need to forgive them, you're basically saying that they are the problem. The problem is within self. We have to forgive ourselves before we can ask forgiveness of anyone else. I mean, the other person might not even realise that they've done something to hurt you, and you turn around and say, I forgive you. That can be actually quite damaging in that, you know, to sort of assume.
Yeah.
That they know that they've done something wrong. They might not even know that. So it's a very delicate situation, forgiveness.
It is, yeah. And don't forget that in this method, you're not actually talking to the other person.
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah.
So there's not a question of you saying to them, to their face, I forgive you. What you're doing is, in the mind, it's an imaginary situation. Yeah.
But also to forgive the self, I think it has to come from the self, you know.
That's right.
you know, really, that's where it's the hurt is inside, because we need to forgive ourselves before we can forgive anyone else. But thank you for tonight. Thank you. That's very valuable. Thank you.
Good.
So, good evening, friends. And my name's Sue. I'd like to tell you about the Pure Land Project, which has been explained quite a few times now on these Friday nights. In fact, that's where I heard about it, because I'm a member of our society here. And Higher Grievous sent some people to talk about the Pure Land Project. So that made me think it would be a nice project for me when I retired. So it's about quite a long time ago. I've been retired for 3 years now, and I've been working with a team to bring this project into life. So people at Higher Grievous thought that it would be a good idea if there was somewhere where people at the end of their lives could spend time in a spiritual environment. I think as Buddhists, we understand that the state of mind you're in when you die really does impact on the kind of rebirth that you will have. It's very valuable to all of us. And actually, you might be surprised to hear there isn't anywhere at the moment which is dedicated to helping people to die in a spiritual environment. There are hospices, of course. They offer medical help and nursing help, allied health help. Health is basically what it is as people are dying. So what we envisage is a place where we are offering care to people for time during which they're dying. So there are people who are diagnosed as having a terminal condition, and that can be a disease, it can be the result of injury, or it can just be old age, but they are dying, and they're not expected to live. So the project is that they will have the opportunity to come and spend time, we'll care for them, but because they're already suffering a terminal illness, they've probably got in place their medical services and their nursing through, say, Silver Chain. They might have allied health professionals visiting them, and they can bring those people with them. So we won't provide the actual medical and nursing care, but we'll provide service to them so that they have somewhere to stay, and their food, their cleaning, everything is done for them. They're comfortable, and they have the services that they would normally have at home. And the idea is that they stay as long as they need to. This started out of nothing, so we're creating something that doesn't exist, and we've got to the stage where we're now an incorporated association. And we're looking for somewhere to start a pilot project. We need to give it a go and see if we can meet various needs. One of them is to see if we get enough people who are interested in being our clients. Actually, I think we won't be looking very hard, because I joined the Palliative Care Association to just learn a lot more about palliative care. And in speaking to people there, they're very keen to hear when we get it off the ground, because they say there's nothing like this anywhere, and they would be very interested. So I think we'll have people who want to come and stay with us. We also need to know if we've got enough people to be our volunteers. We need to, we have in fact a model of care now. We've written a model of care which describes all our standards of care, including risk management and the kind of people who will work there, how we will look after our staff as well as looking after the patients. So we really are at a stage where we've got quite a lot of interested people. We are looking for a building that we will be able to use just for maybe one patient at a time, and to see if we can get enough people to be our volunteers and to help care for the patients. We also need to be careful in terms of the sort of care they bring with them. I don't know if you know this, but in a hospital, when a doctor walks in through the door, they don't just walk in, they have to be on the list of visiting practitioners who are allowed to visit the hospital. The same thing would occur with us. The patient may be visited by a doctor at home, but we have to know it's a real doctor. So we have to have someone credentialing the medical staff who come on site, and for that we probably need the help of a doctor. We need to credential the nursing staff if they're not already working for Silver Chain or a similar nursing association. So the patient may be employing a private nurse, or they might employ a private physio, any other allied health person. We'd have to credential those people. So there's a lot of that sort of care that we have to ensure as our really is our risk management to ensure safety of our staff. We would also have to make sure that all our volunteers and staff who visit have criminal record screening, you know, that sort of thing to ensure the safety of the patients. So all that administrative stuff we've been through at considerable length, and we've got it to a state now where we know how we would run it. We just need enough people to help us to do so, and we need money, of course. We are accepting donations. I'm sure you thought I would mention that at a certain point. And we'll be looking for grant funding as well. We'll be looking for crowdfunding. So the sort of things that we need actually in our work are really anybody. We need ordinary people with life experience who are caring and who would like to work in some capacity. We need doctors, we need nurses, we need other health professionals who've got professional knowledge who would be able to help us with our planning and with our assurance of quality in the care that we offer. We need to come to grips with the maintenance of the grounds and the building and all those sort of things, so people with those sort of skills as well. We also need IT help, because we'll probably, with our crowdfunding, need somebody who's good with IT, putting sort of advertising us. And we will need to make sure that we keep our profile out there on the internet so that people know about us and continue to donate. So really, whatever you have in this room would probably do very nicely, whether it's your charming personal qualities, your professional ability, your money, whatever you have that you can actually offer would be gratefully accepted. Otherwise, if you know people who might be interested, we'd be very happy if you would tell them about us. We do have a website. Is the website on our material? I know that Len has left a book on the back table for you to sign your name if you want to be part of our interest group. We've got people who just receive information from time to time, and they help us. We had our first money-raising effort recently with a harp concert that was held at Hiagriva. And information about the outcome of that, how much money we got and all that sort of thing, upcoming events, we will send out to people who are interested. So you could put your name down if you just want information about the project. And you could also join. We have brought some membership forms along if you're interested. So this project will probably move into its pilot study perhaps within 18 months, we hope. That would run for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. During that time, we would find out all the problems that need to be ironed out and what sort of structure we'd end up with. Because we probably need a nurse to be there at least some of the day, we may need to employ a medical consultant. So we don't really know those things until we've got it started. And that will draw a picture of the sort of funds we might need, whether it's going to be free or whether people will need to pay a fee. Those sort of things will have to be ironed out. So we have a lot of work to do, but I think we've had such luck from time to time that we must be being smiled upon, and I think we are going to be able to get this going. I really do think so. So that's really where we are at the moment, and I hope that any of you who think you might be interested will put your name down and we'll keep you in touch with what's happening. So I'll ask if anybody has any questions about the project.
Over there you can't ask nothing from people. You have to give them beyond your limit, and if people have something to give, they will give. And it's, I think, most important to find good persons who have the heart to do it.
Yes, absolutely.
Heart to go.
People will have different levels of being able to help. Yeah.
Exactly, but if you have a good heart, you can always find the help. because dying person, he doesn't need medical help. He needs more mental and emotional help to cheer him up, give you that stability, that good mood, that sharing of life, you know?
Yes.
Even if he has 2 days to live, if he spends that 2 days beautiful in harmony, and then it's the best 2 days. But he can be under the medical treatment, he can live for another 2 years. But the 2 years is full of suffering and no joy and nothing. Then these 2 days is much better than these 2 years.
One thing I didn't mention, of course, was that people who've got their own spiritual teacher can bring that person in as well, and they'll be able to be visited in on site by whether, and also, of course, that it's not only for Buddhists. It's for anyone who really needs to come and spend some time in a spiritual environment, and it can be someone of a different religion or somebody without a religion. But they'd certainly bring in their own spiritual teacher if they wanted to as well.
I think there's a question over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Buddha one time said that, you know, you give without even wanting thank you back. And that's the way it should be. Be first when the help is needed, and when the thanks are given out, be the first to leave.
Quite. Can you let this lady ask me the question? Thank you. Thank you for your comment.
How are you aiming to create the spiritual environment? I mean, what constitutes this spiritual environment?
Partly it's the building. We want it to be somewhere with a garden, that they will be able to see a garden. There'll be things like that to make it peaceful and beautiful, to be in a peaceful place. The people themselves will be trained. Len did mention the kind of training that we'd be giving our volunteers. And so they'll be dealt with in a peaceful and dignified way. And they'll also be able to talk about their fears, if they have fears, or things that they may want to resolve. And they'll be able to bring their own spiritual teacher in to be with them and to help them with their difficulties, if they have difficulties.
And there are simple things like the way the rooms will be allowed to be decorated, and there are all sorts of recorded chanting, prayers, and so on that can be played if you have a collection of these things ready that provide a good environment instead of watching television.
It sounds as though, I mean, to me, that the qualities that you're bringing to the place are qualities that should be in most places where people are dying.
You'd love to think that.
Yeah, yeah.
But having worked in health, even a nice place like, say, Osborne Park Hospital, where I used to work for a long time, the noise that goes on 24/7. And it's not that they're clumping their feet on purpose, it's just they're busy. They've got too many patients. I mean, they've got too much to do, not enough time to do it. They've had funding removed and lost people, and they're rushing about like mad. They're having meetings in the nursing station quickly, comparing notes about all the patients, natta, natta, natta. They're having their morning tea somewhere, natta, natta, natta. They can't help that. It's their working life. The noise is, I guess, it's when it stops. If you go on the same ward at night, which I have done, and struck by the unearthly silence, you realize how noisy it is in the daytime. All hospitals are noisy. They can't help it. They've got so many people working there, and they're all so busy. They just have to scoot madly around. You can hear everything going on in the background, all kinds of machines rattling around in the corridors, food trolleys rattling around. It goes on and on and on. People's voices, they don't keep quiet. Even at night, they don't keep quiet. So this would be different because there won't be that many people there. It would be very quiet. But also the people will be trained from a spiritual point of view. I mean, actually, the hospitals I've worked in, you get some very spiritual people working there who probably wouldn't call themselves spiritual, actually, but they are anyway because of their experience working with dying people and people in terrible pain. They do learn a lot. But in our particular environment, it's going to be set up beautifully. they'll be somewhere where they can see out. There'll be beautiful things. There'll be plants. There'll be flowers. There'll be a way to open the window to hear the birds. They'll be quiet, and they will have their carers visiting if they've got carers, their spiritual teachers. They'll find the people who work there have been trained to work with the dying specifically. And that makes a big difference. Added to which, you know, if you're a Buddhist and you're working with the dying, even if they're not a Buddhist, your lack of fear about death would really rub off on them. So the sort of care we want to give is a very accepting of death and an understanding that it's a natural process. And there's nothing to be afraid of, it's normal. It's to be accepted like an old friend because it is an old friend. We've all done it so many times. I remember actually going away with a friend, a school friend, and we stayed in her grandmother's house in Wales, and our little room was under the rafters at the top of the house, and I lay back after a long car journey, and she burst out laughing. I said, "What's the matter?" She said, "You look as if you're waiting to be buried." And I realized I always lie like this. And I realized that, I thought, that's funny, I always do that. Now I realize why. It's because I've lain waiting to be buried so many times and done that so many times. Honestly, that has to be it. Death is an old friend, and those who work there will understand that really well, that it's not something to be afraid of, it's something to be slipped into gently. And the resolution of problems, it really is good, because you need to let go. You don't want to be hooked into some ghost realm because of your unfinished business. You want to actually have come to terms with things and let it all slip off before you go, because actually the progress that we make is really when we're alive. After we've passed over, it's sort of too late for any more resolution of this life. We do it now while we're alive. So for us to provide people that can talk to them about that sort of thing without being afraid of talking about it is really very important. And to have time, because we're not treating the patients, they're expected to die. If they start to lose it, we're not worried. They're going to die anyway, so they're allowed to die. So there isn't going to be a hasty clattering in of the resuscitation trolley and trying to bring them back. If they are dying, they'll just die. If they don't die, they'll just be able to continue living in a peaceful place and let it happen. I think we probably keep on living until we have resolved things, you know, and this will be a place where people can resolve things. It will be a relief for them to be in a place where no one is trying to do anything for them anymore. They're allowed to go. They'll probably stay longer for that because nobody's pushing them or trying to make them do anything.
Thanks, Sue. That was excellent answer.
I think we're 8:30 or 8:35, so
just
one quick one. Yeah.
My dad's in Shawford Lodge, aged care, high duty, high care, and it's a wonderful place. They are so caring. It's quiet. It's lovely. He's got a lovely outlook, and they say that he could die there. But I'm just wondering. Do you know how the palliative care is extended in aged care at all, or do they send him off to another place then for palliative care, or do you know or you don't know, because I haven't seen
him. Is this a nursing home that he's living
yes,
in?
Yes,
well, people are allowed to die in nursing homes.
Yes.
If it's understood that the only wobbly area is if you're on the young side.
He's 94.
Okay, he's not on the young side.
Because
I was going to say an advanced care directive is a good idea. If there's any doubt, because I know when my mother was 85, she had a heart attack in the hospital and they resuscitated her. And at the time, we thought that was a good idea. But when she was 96, we kind of thought, you know what, it would have been better if she'd have gone when she was 85, because those 10 years were not very good ones. So for myself, I'll be doing one, and I'll be saying,
Yes, no, we've done that.
Yes. He can die in a nursing home. That's not a problem.
And I mean, it's a beautiful place.
They don't
place.
Have to send him somewhere else. They'd only send him somewhere else if they wanted to resuscitate him or do surgery. And if he said, no, I'm not having any surgery, then no, they won't do that.
No, thank you. And I mean, the priest comes to visit him, and so,
Yes, he can stay there.
Yes, no, so there are places that are quite different from what you described in the hospital.
It would be if they think that he may need an operation.
Yeah.
And sometimes operations are not done to save the patient's life, but to make them more comfortable.
Yes.
And those things have to be dealt with the patient and the doctor. Do we really want this? Because if they do want it, they'd have to send him to a hospital.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't want it, he can say no. I don't know if you know this, but it is legal for a person who doesn't want to eat or drink to just lie there and not be fed and not receive water. It's not assisted suicide. It's legal to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So if he wants to just shut down, they can legally let him do that. And you should know that yourself as his daughter. Then you can stop them. If he were to say to you, I don't want to eat, I don't want to drink, you can say he's entitled to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Because some people, you know, they don't want to be kept going.
No, Dad's very keen to keep going at the moment.
Well, that's his choice, yes. That's his
but
choice.
He refused to go to hospital the last time they wanted to send him to hospital.
Yeah.
And he said no. And he got over. It was just heartburn. And they send them off to hospital at the slightest thing. And he just said no. Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a lady. No.
I think we might call it a night.
Yeah. If you have...
I think we've run out of time.
It is nice to be at home, yes, you're saying. The only problem with that is if you need intensive nursing care round the clock. Sometimes, I mean, you can get nurses coming in, but it's not always possible. Sometimes you have to go into a care home. So if you're going to slip away, don't forget, if you want information, could you put your name and contact details, because we would love to be in touch with you. Thank you very much for your time.